How Aristotle might say, a really vicious person might gain change. So.
Okay, thank you. I provided handouts for you because there are certain parts of the paper I won't be able to read today, just in case you want to know more about some of the suggestions I draw. Hopefully with more detail, it'll clear it up in the handout. I wrote this paper because it seemed that there was controversy over whether or not Aristotle believed that a person could change. And you know, after all of us here, we're all adults, so it's kind of an issue for us, because if we're not perfect yet, we'd like to be hopeful that perhaps there's something we can do about that. So I think I'll just get into this first. It's the paper's entitled, Breaking the Habit, How Aristotle Might Say a Thoroughly Vicious Person Could Begin to Change. Aristotelian scholars have debated for years over the possibility of character change. Some hold that Aristotle did not entertain the possibility, while others say that he did believe character change is possible, but very hard. Of those who hold that Aristotle did believe in character change, few have tried to demonstrate how it is that such an alteration might happen. Perhaps a more interesting question is how the change begins. Given Aristotle's discussions of fixed character states, it is difficult to see how a person might initiate movements towards character alterations. Thomas C. Brickhouse believes that Aristotle contradicted himself and didn't realize the inconsistency between his ideas on fixed character and the possibility of character change. Gianluca D'Annunzio thinks that Aristotle did not contradict himself, but that character change is initiated only by an agent's accidental experimentation with virtuous acts. While both philosophers have elucidated many points involved in the problem of interpreting the issue from Aristotle's point of view, neither has taken all of his philosophy into account. It is my contention that Aristotle did believe in character change, felt it was only initiated by external coercion and utter chance, and that, given this fact, a philosopher such as himself ought not to devote time to discussing the issue. This is one of the reasons why a lot of people think Aristotle didn't entertain the possibility of character change. He doesn't give us a lot of information on it. Okay. In this paper, I want to try to do a series of things to explain my point. First, I want to just provide evidence that Aristotle did in fact believe in character change. So I'm going to give you some examples in the text where it does seem that that's what he was going for. Then I will discuss the implications of various Aristotelian ideas that might lead readers to mistakenly conclude that he did not entertain the possibility. Thirdly, I will tell you Gianluca D'Annunzio's contributions to try and resolve these problems. Fourthly, I'll tell you how my position differs from D'Annunzio's. And finally, I hope to elaborate on the rather depressing conclusion that Aristotle felt that these instances of character change are so unlikely that it's not important to incorporate it in his corpus. So, let's get into this. A positive interpretation of the possibility of character change. One of the reasons why scholars believe Aristotle intended to allow for character change is in his discussion of how character is not natural. He writes, "None of the moral excellences arise in us by nature, for nothing that exists by nature can form a habit contrary to its nature. For instance, the stone which by nature moves downwards cannot be habituated to move upwards, not even if one tries to train it by throwing it up 10,000 times." This seems pretty obvious, right? Here, Aristotle seems to be using the apparent obvious thing, that characters do change, as a counterargument for the idea that character is natural. If we cannot accept the excellence that excellence is natural because nothing by nature can alter its habits, then we must be trying to classify excellence as something that can alter its habits. Aristotle did believe that there is some natural component to character acquisition, but it is not a preselected nature. He says, "We are adapted by nature to receive them and are made perfect by habit, the them being virtues." Aristotle also writes, "It is from the same causes and by the same means that every excellence is produced and destroyed. While we are naturally able to have character, the type of character that we acquire is dependent on the type of actions that we habituate." Aristotle does provide us with one more specific commentary in the categories that strongly suggests that character might change in later life. And he writes, "For the bad man, if led into better ways of living and talking, would progress, if only a little toward being better. And if he once made even a little progress, it is clear that he might either change completely or make really great progress. For however slight progress he made to begin with, he becomes ever more easily changed toward virtue, so that he is likely to make still more progress, and when this keeps happening, it brings him over completely into the contrary state and the consequences provided by progress." So it seems that Aristotle did think this was something that's going to happen. And for those of you who are not familiar with the issue, you might be thinking, how could anybody refute it? Why are there scholars out there who are going to tell us that Aristotle didn't allow for character change? Well, even though this paragraph would seem to deny that, it does mean that other implications of things Aristotle said would lead to that conclusion. Okay, so I will begin telling you why people disagree with the interpretation that character change can happen. Some scholars believe that Aristotle denied the possibility of character change due to his ideas of voluntary and involuntary action. He believed that all acts are done for an end. In addition, he held that the ends for which we act are prescribed by our character. In other words, we act towards what we think is good, whether it be actually good or simply apparently good. What we believe to be good has to do with the nature of our character. A virtuous character will desire virtuous ends, and a vicious character will pursue vices. If this is the case, then once one character is established, a moral agent will always desire the same ends and act towards the same ends. Now, in your handout, this argument was first brought to the forum by Brickhouse. In the handout on pages 2 and 3, I gave you a quote from Brickhouse's article that explains it much more thoroughly. The consequences of having your acts prescribed by your character. So it begins at the very bottom of page 2 if you're interested in that. Okay. It would seem that one can only act depending on the character that he has. If this is so, a vicious man has no hope for reform. He will never act out of character, therefore he can never change. The reason why we say this is for Aristotle, in order to develop the character, you have to vigilate the act of that character before it happens. So how could you ever become a good person if, by nature, being a vicious person, you could never do the types of things that good people do? Okay. And in order to change, one must develop an alternative habit by acting consistently in a certain way that promotes said habit and character. This is the apparent paradox that clouds our ability to distinguish how it is that one can change. If Aristotle truly meant to convey that character change is possible, if a man must act contrary to his character in order to change it, and he cannot ever do this on his own volition, how is it that he will ever change? There is still one possible answer to allow a man to change. He may change if initially prompted to do so by external influence. If he is not the one selecting the ends, then it is possible for the ends of his action to be contrary to his current character. Still, there are reasons why scholars dislike the solution. One is, Aristotle's account of responsibility and culpability one has regarding his actions and character leads scholars to think he simply contradicted himself and did think one could change. A second is that Aristotle clearly states that the man of vicious character cannot be reasoned with. It is useless to try to convince him to be good. I argue, firstly, that many misunderstand the idea of culpability for one's character and corresponding actions. Secondly, I argue that when Aristotle considered outside influence, he was not thinking of merely persuading vicious people with words. And now I turn to the section on responsibility and our aversion to an externalistic change. While Aristotle believes that a man is a slave to his character, he simultaneously holds most people accountable for the character that they have. And this just seems to be a contradiction, or at least unfair. If we are responsible for our character, then we should be able to change it, you would think. But we already established that actions are determined by our character state, and it follows that one could not alter his actions after his primary character has been formed. I argue that while this seems to be a contradiction, it is in fact quite sound in the Aristotelian system. Firstly, Aristotle said that only a thoroughly senseless person, one he calls the Comite Anesthetos, is not responsible for his character. Just this person, just this guy. This is because the other who's senseless, is never capable of making choices. However, everyone else at some point was able to choose the actions that they did, right? William Bonson suggests that Aristotle might have thought knowledge of habituation a first principle. Aristotle would come out and say this. This is a conjecture Bonson's group. And he believes this given the following text from Aristotle. Aristotle says, "Now, not to know that it is from the exercise of activities on particular objects that states of character are produced is the mark of a thoroughly senseless person." Aristotle claims that such knowledge is evident, for it is activities exercised on particular objects that make the corresponding character. This is plain from the case of people training for any contest or action. They practice the activity the whole time, quote unquote. Therefore, there is a time where one is forming his character and he is aware of the type of character that he's developing. While it seems that we are aware of the power of habit, we are not always able to act on such awareness. After character development is complete, a man no longer has the opportunity to alter his character. And I'll bring in some Aristotle here, try to read half his quotes rather lengthy. "Yet it does not follow that if he wishes, he will cease to be unjust and will be just, for neither does the man who is ill become well on those terms, although he may perhaps be ill voluntarily, through living incontinently and disobeying his doctors. In that case, it was then open to him to be ill, but not now, when he has thrown away his chance, just as when you have let a stone go, it is too late to recover it. This awareness of the situation is sufficient to hold a person accountable for the character he obtains. However, once the character is formed, he is no longer in control of the types of actions he does. Therefore, we are to blame for all that we do forever, but we had a limited time where we could have chosen otherwise." Pretty tough. With this explanation, it would seem that Aristotle has remained true to his theory of actions while holding men responsible, at least in some sense. However, it would seem that now he is contradicting his idea that character change is possible, which was our original problem. This, however, is not the case. Only if we insist that character change is initiated from within do we still have this problem. Now, this is where I'm going to get to Deluzio's argument, where he thinks character change is possible because he believes that it happens internally for the aging. Deluzio believes that Aristotle's discussion of the vicious man's inability to listen to reason prevents us from considering information by external means. Deluzio writes, "Self-indulgent person," for Deluzio, self-indulgent is vicious. It's the same word for it, the same concept. "The self-indulgent person's conviction is of the sort that destroys the person's ability to entertain right opinion about us." This seems to accord with Aristotle's theory. "Such a conviction could not be changed through argument, since it stems from a fundamental corruption of judgment about moral matters." Sure, fair enough. Deluzio interprets this to mean that for Aristotle, the vicious person can change, but not by external means. It is my contention that Aristotle meant just what he said, that self-indulgent man cannot be changed by argumentation. While argumentation is one type of external means, it does not encompass all varieties, and it is fallacious reasoning to discard all external possibilities based on the failure of one of them to serve as a solution. Before addressing how other external means might awaken the vicious soul of a self-indulgent person, let's consider Deluzio's proposal for how it is that one such character might begin a positive character alteration from within. Deluzio believes that it's possible for a thoroughly vicious or self-indulgent man to begin altering his own character. As we've seen earlier, Deluzio could not say that such an internal change happens by the individual wishing to be good, nor does it happen because he's convinced by verbal persuasion or discussion. In fact, given Aristotle's doctrine of ends being determined by character, one who's thoroughly vicious could not wish to be good, for that would be deciding on an end that is unrelated to his character. Furthermore, he is unreceptive to argumentation and discussion since, as Aristotle tells us, vice is unconscious of itself. How is it then that a self-indulgent man begins improving his character motivated from within? Well, Deluzio thinks this is possible given Aristotle's ideas of self-love and self-loathing. According to Aristotle, wicked people experience a misery that is characteristic of us. On the other hand, the virtuous person experiences love of himself. A wicked person is aware of his misery, even though he might not know exactly how to alleviate it. Deluzio tells us wicked people can form the desire that some good feelings cease. and can also act on it. Such a desire is a higher order one. In other words, while a wicked man doesn't know why he is miserable, he can desire not to be. Timuzio also says, a bad person may have no clear representation of what being good amounts to. Rather, it is a generic desire to change so as to reduce or eliminate one's feelings of self-loathing. It is at this stage that exposure to virtue, together with the realization that virtuous people are immune from feelings of self-loathing, may trigger the process of change and induce the vicious person to experiment with acts virtuous people routinely engage in. Very, very, very hopeful. Therefore, if the self-indulgent man desires to cease his self-loathing, in Demuzio's opinion, he is open to realizing that virtuous people do not suffer from self-loathing and attempt to imitate them. He is then able to experiment with virtue. Not only does this analysis seem unlikely, it does not seem like the self-indulgent man anymore. In fact, what Demuzio is describing here is a person's recent transformation into being an incontinent man. If you're not familiar with Aristotle's theory, an incontinent person is a person who knows what is good, but can't bring himself to do it, can't bring himself to act on it. And as we established before, a vicious person, vice is blind, right? It's why it's unconscious of itself, would not notice these things. The man who is striving recognizes the good, if not for pure goodness, at least insofar as it is good for avoiding self-loathing. I, for one, do not think that Aristotle thought a thoroughly vicious person could manage to see. Regardless, the bad person does not wish to be good, but wishes to see pain. If it were possible at all for this to motivate one to take action that happened to be virtuous, it would be solely on the accidental level that such a thing could occur. In other words, while Demuzio has proposed an internal beginning for the improvement process, it is not intentional. It is an accident that this bad man's internal motivations led him to, quote unquote, experiment with virtuous acts. Demuzio is correct to avoid making a claim of an initiation of character change that is both internal and intentional. Given what Aristotle describes to be the fixed state of the vicious man, it would be impossible for him to intend to be good. Demuzio's example of recovering vicious person is barely responsible for his initial turn towards the good. Even if we were to entertain the possibility that a thoroughly vicious person might begin such an alteration of character in this way, it is an example of what Aristotle might consider the beginning of character reform by chance. Brickhouse reminds us that there are two main ways actions can contribute to character development that illustrate the distinction. Brickhouse tells us, Aristotle is in a position to distinguish between character-producing acts and acts by character produced. An act flows from a state of character when the end for which the act is undertaken is set by the state of character. An act contributes to the development of a state of character, on the other hand, when the end is adopted, as Aristotle says, by chance or by someone else, or because someone else has so advised. The adoption of ends in this latter case is not yet characteristic of the agent. Yes. Okay. All right. So I will get to the final piece. Given Aristotle's conditions of possession of a character state, we ought not consider the incontinent man a character anymore. However, he is neither useless nor irrelevant in the issue of character change. Given the rigidity of any fixed state and the nature of habituation, it would follow for a person to first undo his current state before acquiring another character. You wouldn't just go from being a vicious person to being a righteous person overnight, Aristotle. Habit is essential. So let us first discuss why it is that the incontinent man does not have a character in any sense that Aristotle uses. I will skip this part to get towards the end of the paper. There is a two-page excerpt on this in your handout. Basically, I argue that given the behavior and the nature of an incontinent person, they are not a consistent person. They know something is right, if they might even wish to do it, and they just can't do it. So that's not a fixed state. A fixed state would be completely consistent throughout. All right. Now, if we accept that incontinence is not a fixed state, and certainly not in the same way that viciousness is, we can dismiss the question of which of the two men is easier or more likely to reform his character. If the incontinent man does not have a fixed state, he does not have a character, for that is what a character is by definition. Therefore, it is a category state to discuss how it is that he might change his character. He hasn't got one to change. He's in the openness of forming one. Given that a truly fixed state is not one that is open to argumentation, nor able to begin the reformation process from within intentionally. One might conclude that there are, as Aristotle suggests, only two ways that a bad person might begin to change his character. The first way is through general persuasion by external influence. The second is the way Nunzio describes, which is by chance. Now, when I say general persuasion, I just want to make it clear, I don't mean anything physical or anything vicious itself. A few of my colleagues mentioned that could this endanger the virtuous person becoming vicious if they're trying to reform a virtuous vicious person, they're beating them all the time. That's not what I mean. What we mean by being forced to do virtuous acts, or the acts that virtuous people do, just being forced in the sense that we normally think of it, say, in a prison system, where someone is forced to attend seminars, or forced to do, you know, community service work, or projects like that. Just forced in the sense where the person has to do it. It's not their choice. They're in a situation where they don't have any other choice. The consequences would be very unpleasant. And by lack of habituation, they perhaps could grow to like them and develop a virtuous character. Aristotle's aversion to character forms, final section. While many people acknowledge that Aristotle believed in the possibility of character change, few devote attention to how it is that vicious persons might begin to change. Perhaps this is so given the fact that Aristotle himself paid little attention to the issue. Some scholars believe Aristotle's lack of concern is an indication that he didn't believe in character change. I argue that this is not the case. The nature of the necessary and sufficient conditions of character alteration compels Aristotle to ignore the issue. As established in his paper, a vicious person may be shaken from his fixed character state either by external coercion or utter chance. Neither of these options is in the control of the agent in question at that time. Either case would seem to be a stroke of great fortune for a vicious moral agent. Either he is fortunate enough to have a mentor force him out of his fixed state, or he happens upon it himself. Therefore, it is clear that Aristotle did believe in character change. He did, in fact, think it was hard. We may infer from basic tenets of the system that the change of character either requires external initiation or chance. It would take us outside of the influence or a fluke to disrupt this process. A man cannot intentionally initiate a change in his character state if it isn't that fixed. He may only ever choose a new one when he is in the position of not having a fixed character. For this reason, Aristotle warns us to work diligently in forming virtuous characters and encouraging the same among youth. Once sufficiently habituated, one will never know what it is that he ought to want and be left at the mercy of chance and others to ever return him to the position where he may improve himself and his life. Yes.
Who is this person who invoked first principles and at least part of the explanation of
character? Yes, with Bonnes, right? I also included the bibliography in your handout in case anybody wanted to do.
And second, how can the first principles be invoked in this context?
Well, basically what Bonnes is trying to say is he's inferring from reading Aristotle's discussion of habituation that he thought, Aristotle thought, it was evident to everybody, that habit becomes a character. He thought Aristotle, in first principle, habit is something that you know, something that is evident to all human beings. And this is why Bonnison refers to it as that. I was very careful to say that I did not find Aristotle saying it that explicitly in any of the works that I read. But I do think that Bonnison has a compelling argument, given the text that he brings up, that it does seem that Aristotle thinks that it is a very common notion. And he seems to separate the anesthetron, the one that doesn't have this notion, from everybody else, and he exonerates him from blame for the character he develops for that reason. So in that sense, Bonnison does seem to have very good analysis that whether or not it was a first principle is something Aristotle thinks is common knowledge and sufficient to blame other people for the character they develop. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Yes, Andy.
So the only way that a vicious person can change, like you were saying that a vicious person cannot choose to change.
Right.
Is ever going to be blind from the internal.
According to Aristotle, which is kind of depressing.
So I'm just wondering how that fits in with Aristotle's view of man as like as like naturally ordered toward emptiness. And where, when Aristotle's conception of emptiness is to be virtual, basically.
Yes, that's a very good question. Is that the end of your question? I don't need to go.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of think of how can that be consistent in my life.
It's a very good question, and the answer that I would like to give is Aristotle makes it clear, I believe in the, I think it's in the first or the second book of Nicomachean Ethics, that while everybody's striving for happiness, not everybody agrees on what happiness is. And his whole point of writing the Nicomachean Ethics is to instruct the youth on how it is so they don't mess up too early or they can't, or it's irreversible. So it does seem to him that happiness, we all know we want it, but we all have differing opinions on how to achieve it, and for that reason, because he's so concerned about people missing it, he doesn't want anyone to go astray too soon. Very good question, though. Thank you. Yes.
When you were talking about how some of it came through like external influences, and you said, well, you wouldn't want to say that a virtuous person would become vicious by nature of. In the process of making someone, but and then he talks about how force would be acceptable in like a prison system, but isn't to a certain extent force, however you use it, whether it be forcing people to go to seminars and using blind, isn't that to a certain extent, wouldn't that be considered, I guess,
not virtuous,
and in a sense almost an act of, I guess, violence on prison in a different way?
Well, I think that's a very good issue. I think it's also indicative of modern conceptions of how to treat people. We think that how to treat people is let them have radical freedom and decide for themselves, which might not have been the culture Aristotle was coming out of, firstly. Secondly, that's a very, very good point to bring up because it enforces why Aristotle ignored the issue. Aristotle, in no place, tells us that virtuous people are supposed to make other virtuous people. He does not tell us that the virtuous person is supposed to be a virtuous teacher, right? He doesn't tell us this. So, and I think there's a reason why he doesn't tell us this. His ethics, in a way, and I know that lots of people have said this, are kind of egoist, right? Or they do have some kind of egoism involved, where you're supposed to be improving yourself, and you are not responsible to make other people better. And I believe that might be one of the reasons why he didn't go into detail with it, is because if it's possible, let's say a mostly virtuous, I mean not fixed virtuous, but a very confident person, let's say that you are a vicious person for argument's sake, and a very confident person makes you do those things that the confident person knows are good, and the confident person also really supposed to do even if they're not happy about it, right? And they help you to be broken out of this vicious habit. It doesn't necessarily mean that the common person is doing the right thing towards you. And it perhaps could endanger their track to being virtuous. And I do agree with you that it does seem to be a little contradictory there. I think that might be something that's all had in mind. I am completely speculating, I admit that. But again, perhaps that's why he didn't tell us to make other people good. Yes,
yeah. And one more question. I think you said that an incontinent person doesn't have character. You were basically saying.
Yes, yeah, this is something that I'm trying to initiate into the dialogue, yes.
So if that's the case, that like the incontinent person would.
No. Basically, when I say fixed character state, I'm talking about the thoroughly vicious and the thoroughly virtuous,
yeah.
Which of course there is an issue of whether or not that ever happens. Something that's thoroughly.
Right, that's kind of my question, because like, if that's the case, then basically nobody has character. And then so, like, Aristotle's whole idea is just kind of. I mean, if that's the case, then this doesn't really apply to anybody who exists.
That's true. This is something that came up in discussion with my professor that guided me through writing this. And it seems that in scholarship, too, there's an inconsistency. It seems that most Aristotelian scholars would like to say that nobody's thoroughly virtuous, but a lot of them are perfectly happy saying that there's just thoroughly vicious people. So it would seem that we would have to commit to either saying that there are virtuous and vicious people, or that everybody's somewhere in between and we're all thriving. Because it is clear that Aristotle says that it's very, very difficult to ever become perfectly virtuous, right? At any point in your life, you never call a man happy until he's dead. At any point of your life, everything could just, you know, go to waste, right? For Aristotle, he makes it very clear that it's not like when you're 30, you're going to be happy when you're 6, right? So it would seem that we have to be consistent, whether we're going to, and Aristotle also says that there are virtuous people in his text. So it would seem that either we're wrong, there are virtuous people for Aristotle, or he contradicted himself with having thoroughly vicious people for people that can be perfectly good. I'm not sure.
And then I want to also say that, like, on Aristotle's account, it seems like at least, I mean, if you're going to have a distinction between a continent and an incontinent person, then they must have some kind of dispositions, at least, right?
Yes. Yes.
So wouldn't you be able to at least say, well, they have something like a character? Because they have at least some kind of, like, the continent person is disposed somehow, usually, you know, for one of these reasons.
Yes.
But it's me.
Absolutely. This is the two-page text I put in your handout as well about the difference between state and disposition for Aristotle. That is true. The only thing that I'm arguing is that the continent person and the incontinent person are able at any moment to act in a different way. Like they are able to diverge from their character state, as opposed to this idea of, you know, once you've thrown the pebble away, it's not going to be different, right? So I think that they, at least the way Aristotle describes them, have much more freedom to go either way and either get closer to being virtuous or closer to being vicious of their own volition without anyone else telling them they have to. Any more questions? How are we at time?
I think we're just left for dick and done. So.
Well, thank you so much for your presence, and I'll be around, so if you have any more, please, or comments.
Why, is the Unal system just one big Aristotelian experiment?
Who?
The
Unal
system?
You know, I think so every day, more and more. That is the conspiracy theory anyway. Thank you.
Some sort of a, it's all the time.